From the weird to the absurd, strange to unbelievable, explore the stories that beg investigation. From news old and new, we shed light on the most popular weird news to the most obscure stories in print. Join Bill and Danielle as they discuss, argue, debate, agree, and even laugh at some of the strangest topics in existence. What is your favorite topic? Feel free to join us and give us your suit nomination.
Welcome to Tsunami Nation. I'm Danielle Passion.
I'm Bill Bachman.
Did I introduce you yet?
I can introduce myself.
I can introduce you.
Okay, go ahead.
And to my left is my side bitch, Mr. Bill Bachman.
Missed you guys last week?
We definitely did. We had a lot of troubles with Blog Talk Radio.
No.
But, no, we did. But hopefully now it's all back on track.
So far, so good, yeah?
Yeah, so far. Keep your fingers crossed, and let's hope that nothing else happens with this lovely radio station. Tonight, we are talking about the Puck Wedgie. We got this idea for tonight's show from one of the show's friends and our close personal friend, John Brightman.
Yeah.
If you might know John Brightman from Ghost Adventures and other shows on the Travel Channel.
A million different paracons.
But this particular show that just premiered on...
Destination America. It was on Friday night.
It was on Friday night on Destination...
Or no.
Thursday night? No.
It was...
It was last week.
Yeah, Thursday or Friday.
Thursday or Friday last week. His show is called America's Bermuda Triangle, The Bridgewater Triangle. And it gave us the idea to do a show about the Puck Wedgie.
I wasn't familiar with the Puck Wedgie, and it was freaking amazing. It was probably my favorite part of the whole.
And I tell you, I know everyone knows how I feel about paranormal television. It's all smoke and mirrors. But I first heard of the Puck Wedgie from Paranormal State, an episode they did during their fourth season, and they actually did an episode on the Puck Wedgie. And I remembered it from that once I saw John Brightman's documentary on Destination America. Very, very interesting to me, this whole story. Why don't you tell them what a Puck Wedgie is, Bill?
All right, a Puck Wedgie is a 2 to 3 foot tall being from the Wampanoag folklore, Native American folklore. A Puck Wedgie's features resemble those of a human, but with enlarged noses, fingers, and ears. Their skin is described as being smooth gray, and at times has been known to glow.
Yeah, and in Native American lore, Puck Wedgies have a lot of traits and abilities. They can appear and disappear at will. They can transform into a walking porcupine. It looks like a porcupine from the back, and then like a half... in the front, like a half troll, half human, and it walks upright. They can attack people and lure them to their deaths. In John Brightman's episode of this America's Bermuda Triangle, which we'll get into in a little bit, there was a gentleman, and I'm Lorenz Holder.
I think that's right.
Who was saying that he had seen one in this particular area. And it was saying something in he thinks Native American.
No, I thought it was Native American.
Oh, that's correct. It was us that said it was perhaps in a Native American tongue.
Right.
And the way this gentleman Holder interpreted it was it saying, come here, come here. The Puck Wedgie wouldn't go to him, but it wanted him to go to it. They actually are known to attack people, lure them to their deaths. They're able to use magic. They have poison arrows. They can create fire at will. Puck Wedgies are believed to be the souls of Native Americans they have killed.
Yep. And going into the research on this, you went to a lot of trouble to come up with this research, Daniel. And one of the things that stood out is where it says they lure you to your death and they like you to come to them, like basically... you know, even metaphorically setting up traps whatever, and that the gentleman on the documentary said it wouldn't come to him. It was like, come here, you know, come
yeah.
here. And, you know, I remember the guy saying that after reading this this research.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then that's how I felt, too, once I started reading this particular thing about luring people.
Mm-hmm.
He thought that it was trying to tell the dog to come to
right.
it. Turns out, perhaps, it was not calling the dog. It
and
was
the guy's lucky
him.
He didn't go over there. Like, he turned around and went home.
Yep, and this gentleman actually didn't go and tell anybody this story. He was just walking his dog in this particular area. And he didn't tell anyone this story for decades.
Right.
And then he decided one day, he got older
yeah.
and he said, one day I'm going to die. This story needs to get out for my children, for whomever. And he started writing a simple blog.
And maybe, you know, I see all these older people. We see them from, you know, you've seen all these documentaries with people from Area 51 where they're older. You see a lot of these people when they're older and you think, now this old person couldn't just make up crap. But, you know, they weren't always old. They weren't always this old, cute person. You know what I mean?
Exactly right. But I think it holds something true. For me, reason why is because this gentleman didn't come out with it for decades.
Like he wasn't trying to make a buck off of it or something.
Exactly. I mean, perhaps he is now.
Maybe.
We don't know him. I don't think he is.
He seemed genuine on TV.
Because he seemed genuine, but you know, TV is TV.
Yeah.
Do I trust in John Brightman's work.
Yeah, I do too.
He's a very trustworthy investigator.
Nobody knows that land like he does.
Nobody knows that land. You know?
You know,
he knows that land like the back of his hand.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to put people on that are full of fucking shit. Let's just put that out there.
Yeah, and but you never know. That's the problem.
Yeah.
But,
well, John Brightman could have done all the research he wants to into this individual, and then this individual could still be lying. But what holds true to me is that he held it in for decades.
Yeah.
Perhaps he felt more comfortable coming out with it in most recent years because the paranormal community
has been
different
more accepted,
now.
Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, Native Americans believe that the Pukwudgies, and I love the way you say it, because it sounds like a hockey player with his underwear up his butt, the way you say it, like a puck wedgie. It's hilarious. I love it.
It's a wedgie, man.
Okay. But the Pukwudgies, the Native Americans believe they were best left alone. When you see a Pukwudgie, you're not supposed to mess with them, or they will repay you by playing nasty tricks on you or by following you and causing trouble. They were once friendly to humans, but then turned against them. They're known to kidnap people, push them off cliffs, attack their victims with short knives and spears, use sand to blind people. Pretty nasty little gremlins, actually.
Yeah, it's basically how it came to mind with me, too, to picture it as they describe,
mm-hmm.
as like a gremlin.
Yeah.
You know? And going back to that Paranormal State episode that I saw, that's what they were doing to this particular family in this home. They were playing little tricks on them and this and that. And once they did their investigation and realized that this is what it could be, they were on Native American
right.
land, and the Pukwudgie was believed there, you know, strongly. It's a scary thing. What they did actually to rid the Pukwudgie from this land was go out and plant something back in nature, like George Turner was telling you the other day on your show, Nikki By Incarnate, about how you can appease the Native American is by going back onto your land and planting a fruit tree.
Giving back to the land. Basically.
Yeah, you're giving back to the land
mm-hmm.
what the white man, us, took
we
away
take
from
and
them.
Take and take, yeah.
Yeah. So that's supposed to quell any kind of mischievous activity. I know people run right away to the demonic, and they run right away to a lot of really bad thing. I call it more mischievous.
Well, the way they're described, though, and the way, you know, the drawings, the depictions of them, they're freaking adorable, actually. Like, I think if, you know, I'm scared of everything. I'm scared of spiders. Now I'm scared of koala bears.
Thanks to Ellen.
Yeah. I'm scared of a lot of things, but I think if we were out just traipsing through New England and one of these adorable things said, come here. Like, I'm not going to go over there, but I'd be like, come here, man. Let's work something out. You meet me halfway or come over here. Like, I want one for a pet.
Exactly right. Exactly right. I really just feel that it's not something that is malevolent. I think it is just something more mischievous, like they said. The origin and legend of the Pukwudgie, because Bill has to make fun of me over
no,
here.
No, it's adorable.
Whatever. The legends of the Pulquid, you began a connection to the Morshup.
Yeah.
That's a creation giant believed by the
Wampanoag, I think.
Wampanoag, to have created most of Cape Cod, actually. He was beloved by the people, and the Pukwudgies were jealous of the affections that the Native Americans had for him. They tried to help the Wampanoag, but their efforts always kind of backfired.
Yeah, and in Freetown, Massachusetts, a small community located in a portion of the state known as the Bridgewater Triangle, or America's Bermuda Triangle, that the documentary was on, it's gained notoriety as a hotspot to paranormal investigators, UFO hunters, cryptozoologists. It's been a locale for strange phenomena before the first European settlers got here. That was part of the documentary, too.
It was. In that documentary, they did not just cover, like, the Pukwudgie. They covered everything. They covered UFOs. Now, just to backtrack a little bit, my son Dominic went to school up in Rhode Island in Providence. Where he went to school, well, where he lived at the fraternity house was literally like a mile from Massachusetts. You just drove and you went there. There was a dog track there. Now I can't remember the name of it. But this particular dog track is known for tons and tons of UFO activity during the races and during everything else. And it's not UFO activity that you would really question. It doesn't look like those Chinese lanterns being...
Right.
It doesn't look like smoke in the sky. This is triangular-shaped UFOs that have other things branching off of them.
Right. And last I checked, like Rhode Island and Massachusetts don't have... launching zones for rockets,
exactly
like
right. Their airport's as big as my thumb, know, kind of like here. but it's very interesting to me if you think of how old Massachusetts is.
Yeah, one of our first settlements.
And the Native Americans, they lived by water. They wanted to be by water. And you go back now, you're talking. We're going to have a caller later on in the show
that knows the history of it.
That knows the entire history of all of this, of the Pukwudgie. He is a historical interpreter, and also we're going to have another friend of the show, Dennis Eastlock, on.
Yeah.
He's from CPR. He also just went on an investigation with these, looking for these Pukwudgies. He says in 1611, there's a place over by him. That from 1611 on, they kept on seeing the Pukwudgie. I don't remember the name of the place now. I'm sure when he comes on, he'll let everybody know. But it's intriguing to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's... I tend to gravitate more towards, as far as cryptid stuff. I seem to validate more things with the Native American legends, just as we were talking about the Thunderbird or the... even Bigfoot, the legends go back way before we got here, way before we started.
Absolutely right. Well, think about it. This same area that we're talking about in Massachusetts, that Bigfoot sightings, UFO sightings, alien sightings, ghost sightings, Pukwudgie, you're talking everything. This is a paranormal investigator's dream. Now, you cannot go here if you're an investigator and just go tramping on someone else's
property.
Land.
Yeah.
This is private property. I suggest you probably contact John Brightman and find out from him the proper channels you need to go through. He probably doesn't want you to have 3,000 people contacting him about it. But I'll tell you one thing. Anybody catches you on their land and trespassing, I hope they shoot you in the face.
Well, I'll tell you this, too. When you get into places like that, like, I'm not stereotyping. I'm from the South, okay? But you go into the woods and stuff, and you're trespassing on people's lands, it's a little different ballgame than going on somebody's turf in the city.
And this is not a tiny area. I want people to understand.
No, this is a giant area.
This is acreage upon acreage upon acreage. This is not someone's yard. This is not a place where you can say, well, how does a Bigfoot hide there? What do you mean, how do they hide? First of all, my theory on Bigfoot is that it's extraterrestrial. That's my theory on Bigfoot.
Yeah?
It's how I believe. I don't believe that it's an animal here, an animal of us. I really believe that it's extraterrestrial.
You don't think it's got like this archaic intelligence from like a caveman or something? Like you think it's extraordinarily intelligent?
Absolutely, and I also think it's alien.
And it has the ability to camouflage, disappear.
Well, think about it.
Well, yeah, I get that, too. I don't think it's, like, from exactly here. I mean, you know, not as far as alien goes. I think maybe it's transdimensional, things like that.
Yeah.
Which, that's a whole different show. But
absolutely, because we're talking about Wedgie.
That's right.
But if you really want an idea of what we saw on this documentary, and again, it was America's Bermuda Triangle, the Bridgewater Triangle on Destination America. When they showed pictures of their depictions of it, it looked like a mini, tiny Bigfoot.
Yeah,
to me.
But cute, though.
But cute, like it had a little pop belly,
yeah.
It's a little cute
big
face,
ears.
Little cute nose, little cute hands. I mean, I want it as a pet.
Yeah.
Probably not, because it'll kill me.
Right.
Push me up a cliff.
Well, if you keep it in a cage, it can't lure you to anywhere. You know what I mean?
Exactly right. So. Well, the Wampanoag tribe has a long history in this area, going back tens of thousands of years. Morshop, who, according to legend, again, was a creation giant responsible for Cape Cod, did so much for the Native American. But in all of his joy of all of that, there was this Pukwudgie.
Yeah. One interesting plot twist to the lore is that Pukwudgies did not start out as malevolent beings. At first, their role was beneficial and helpful to the Indians, but at some point, the Pukwudgies became jealous of Moshop and his wife Squanet, and the favor of the Wampanoag showed them. Soon, the little helpers became a dangerous nuisance, burning homes, kidnapping, killing Native Americans. The legend goes on to reveal that the Native Americans asked Squanet for assistance with them. She told Moshop of the troubles, and he helped by shaking and scattering the little dudes all over New England. Some died as a result, but the ones who survived returned to get revenge. With this exasperated anger, the Pukwudgies attacked Native American villages.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Apparently, they were burning down their villages. They were attacking the Native Americans. The thing I want to know is, like, here again, I'll go back to the Paranormal State episode.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't something they were seeing with their eye. It was in spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So now, and I'm going to ask this of our caller later, if they were seeing them in spirit, how are some people seeing them with their own eyes? Like they weren't seeing them in spirit. Things were happening, and they weren't seeing them. So they were ghosts. You know, you weren't seeing them with your own eyes. But then you have people that are actually seeing them, saying, this is what I've seen.
Well, it's just like the other night, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We were doing Josh Detweiler's show right here on this very network, and you had stopped to go in there and watch the Pope for a minute. And I was talking to Ellen Davies in the chat room. We were talking about a movie, The Purge, and your computer was open, and my computer was open. I was listening to the show, chatting with Ellen, and all of a sudden, we were talking about the movie The Purge, and your computer typed in the chat, that movie was horrible. Well, that's your opinion if the movie sucked, but you weren't here typing that. So that doesn't, you know, things happen all the time. I am now, after 1998, a believer in ghosts and things like that. I've never seen one. I've seen things that they do, I think, and a lot of people have. But some people have seen them. So I think just because one person hasn't seen them doesn't mean that another person hasn't seen them.
Yeah, and if you've seen them and I haven't, doesn't mean that it's not real.
Exactly right.
You know, I agree with that. I just find that point a little intriguing, because do they have the ability to show themselves and then not show themselves? And in that respect, can that make them, you know, a lot of my belief of what the Native Americans were praying to, Sasquatch, the Thunderbird, all of these things, perhaps the Pukwudgie, I believe it could have been alien. I believe that all could have been going on then.
It could be going on now.
Well, yeah,
people
it could
are
be going
off,
on now,
you know?
Absolutely.
The Indians weren't walking around with headphones in their head, you know, they weren't...
With their faces in
their
phones.
They weren't texting, you know, the whole time. And
you know, about my computer typing random things in chat, and this is just a random thing because we have Celestial Ann in chat right now.
Yeah.
And she's our web designer.
Correct.
I don't know if she has like a ghost app over there, able to type things on my
chat
room.
She needs to knock it off because it creeps me out. Then you bounced and watched the Pope again. I'm sitting here by myself and I've got my headphones on. Every 4 seconds I'm hearing somebody whisper my name and you know.
It got you creeped out?
Yeah, I was freaking out.
Well, and it'll be interesting because this week on Thursday, on Saturday of this week, but Thursday will be in Dallas, but on Saturday of this week, Bill will be going into his first haunted location, the Haunted Hill House in Mineral Wells, Texas.
Not for an investigation. We're just going to go in and check it out.
We might just
around.
Throw him in, lock the doors, turn off the lights, and see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm not afraid with that. And on that note, let's take a very quick break, and we will be back in 2 minutes.
2 minutes. Howdy, y'all. Come on down to Texas for the first annual Mineral Wells Paracon 2015, from Friday, December 4th to Sunday, December 6th. Join Lisa Lamrock of Spurs, Texas, with Danielle Passione and Bill Bachman of Ichiba Incarnate Broadcast Network as they give a warm southern welcome to Scott Gruenwald of Paranormal Paparazzi and Ghost Adventures, John Tinney of Ghost Stalkers and WeirdLectures.com, Brian J. Cano of The Haunted Collector on Sci-Fi. Also from Sci-Fi will be Molly O'Connelly from Killer Contact and Randy Hardy of Deep South Paranormal. From the Bio Channel, Chelsea DeMolly. And from the Travel Channel, we'll have John Brightman. Mother Christina Rake will be there, along with the pop culture professor, Dr. Rebecca Hausman. Coyote Chris Sutton, Selena Rohn, Alejandro Dominguez with his new documentary, Haunted Lockdown, and Christopher St. Booth from Spook TV. Reverend Mother Christina Rake will kick off the festivities with a ceremony for the men and women of our armed forces, attended by the Patriot Guard riders. There will be investigations at both the Haunted Hill House and VFW Post 2399, as well as lectures, vendors, and parties. Stick around, you'll get to attend the wedding. Come on out and be a part of this extravaganza. For ticket information, go to www.mwp2015.com.
The Mineral Wells Paracon 2015 is brought to you by Incubi Incarnate Broadcast Network, Spurs, Texas, Brian Hathaway, Clark Gardens, Fuzzy's Taco Shop, George Turner, Ghost Stalkers North Texas, Neosho County Paranormal Investigators, Vita Ortiz, the New Mexico Paranormal Association, Knitted Kingdom, and Hobbs Paranormal Phenomenon Investigators.
Hello, this is Wes Forsyth, host of Paranormal Filler, and I will be at the Scarefest.
Scarefest!
That's what I said.
The largest horror and paranormal convention in the United States.
Do you know where it is?
The Lexington Center, September 11th through the 13th.
Well, I'll be there.
Meet over 80 of your favorite horror and paranormal celebrities.
Like me.
There's a costume ball, seminars, movie screening, and lots of scary merchandise.
Yeah, but I'll be there.
For more info, visit thescarefest.com.
I was going to tell them that.
Scarefest, September 11th through the 13th at the Lexington Center.
Will you give me a chance?
Be brave if you dare, but don't come alone.
Fine, what he said.
Welcome back, and I hope that everyone has already gotten their tickets for Scarefest to go see Wes Forsythe.
It is this weekend.
Absolutely.
Right
it
here.
Is Friday to Sunday of this week. You go see Wes Forsythe, our very own Coyote Chris Sutton.
Yep, tell Chris hi for us, and George Turner.
And George Turner from Paranormal Magazine, and he also writes the book...
At the Crossroads of Myth, Reality, and Theory. I think.
Great book. We just got our copy today. Thank
already
you,
read
George.
It. It was awesome.
Great, great, great book. But get down to Scarefest and see everyone. And when you do, tell them that Danielle and Bill say hi.
Yeah.
We love those guys. They are
they're awesome.
Just the greatest guys on the planet. And also, let's forget about Scarefest a minute. Come to Mineral Wells, Texas in December.
Absolutely. It's going to rock.
It is going to rock.
I mean, every day something's added to it. Every day it's getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, it definitely is. And we have a nice new surprise. Horror author Tim Miller will be there. He is one of the best guys in writing horror that there is. It is like fringe horror.
Even if I'm kind of into that genre of horror. But even if I wasn't, I would just like to hang out with the dude. Like, he's just
hilarious. Oh, my God.
He was
great. Actually, he was on The Freak Show on Sunday night with Holly and Ryan. He is our newest guest at the Mineral Wells Paracon. He will be selling his books there. You've got to get his books. I will tell you, they are not for the faint of heart. It's not the kind of horror that you see in movies. It is picture the worst thing that you would ever want to read about. And that's it.
Celestial in the chat room, you're an author as well. These books aren't for you.
These are for, like, if you're 40 and over. And you haven't had anything horrible happen to you in your life.
Or if you like real horrible shit that happened to you.
Or if you just like real horrible shit happening to others.
Yeah,
definitely get your tickets. You can go to our website at www.mwp2015.com. They're selling out. I think we're down to 20 VIP tickets left. I hadn't checked it today, but as of like 2 days ago, there was 20 left. You get to hang out with me and Bill and Coyote Chris and Celestial McBride.
John Brightman, Scott Grunewald.
And all of our wonderful power celebrities that we have, John Tenney and Scott Grunewald. And, of course, Lisa, our awesome partner. Can't wait to go see her on Thursday.
Oh, I know. Is she adorable, or I mean,
she's like 2'11" and hilarious.
She is, and
nothing bothers this girl. Whatever we say to her, like, I'm a control freak, and Cece, you're in the chat room. You know that I'm a massive control freak. I can't handle without not being a control freak.
Right. Exactly.
Bill tries to be a control freak, but then I just yes him to death, and I do it my way anyway. But with Lisa, there's never whatever you want.
She's like the perfect partner. She works as hard as anybody I've ever met, and she'll do whatever you ask. She doesn't argue
she doesn't argue. We're doing this. Okay, girl, do it. Like, I don't know if it's, not even from Texas. Like, now she's in Texas, but she's from Michigan. Like, she's a hardcore girl.
Yeah, but she's been in Texas long enough. She has the Texas accent. I mean, she's a Texan. She's not a Michiganian.
Shush with your Texan. Nope. I don't even know where you're from. Your accent is weird. But let's get back to the book, Reggie.
That's
but
right.
Don't forget to get your tickets for Mineral Well. I'm just saying that. Okay, so listen up. Satisfied he had done his job and pleased his wife.
Well, did you want
to? Morshop went away for a while. In his absence, the pup. Did I want to what? Did you just try to interrupt me?
No, I'm sorry. We just came back from break. If you wanted to say, you know, that this Morshop, his wife went to town and said, hey, you need to bust these little bastards up. And then he went down, scattered them all over the place, pissed them off. And then he thought, what? Go ahead.
Interesting. I guess I'm coming on my incarnate tomorrow night. Tell you how to do your
shit. No, just help
me. No, it's okay, baby. Don't worry. You just tell me how to do things. People don't have a short attention span. They're paying attention.
Okay. I was just making sure.
God. Anyway, he was satisfied he'd done his job, and he pleased his wife. Morshop went away for a while. In his absence, the Pukwudgies returned. They again changed their relationship with
Wampanoags.
I got to take Native American lessons. They were no longer just a nuisance, but they were kidnapping the children, burning villages, forcing the Wampanoag deep into the woods, and actually killing them.
See, this is like you see a progression in crimes. Like, this kid's stealing a stereo, then he's smoking the reefer.
This kid's like just like burning ants, and then he's smoking the reefer.
Now they're just murdering villages.
Exactly right. Squanit, Morshop's wife again stepped in, but Morshop, being very lazy at the time, lazy man. he actually sent his 5 sons to fix the problem. The Pukwudgies
weren't that lazy. He's got 5 sons. They don't even talk about his daughters. Well, they didn't have cable back then either.
Yeah, there was no cable. They had, you know, they didn't have very much to satisfy the mind.
Right.
So maybe we got to get rid of cable.
Let's do it. I mean, get rid of cable. We're on
there. The Pukwudgies then lured the 5 sons into the deep grass and shot them dead with magic arrows. Enraged, Squanit and Morshop attacked as many as they could find and crushed them. but many escaped and scattered throughout New England again. The pup wedgies regrouped and tricked Marshop into the water and shot him with their arrows. Some legends say they killed him, while others claim he became discouraged and depressed about the death of his sons. But after these events, Marshop disappeared from the Wampanoag's mythology. Gone.
Histo. Don't write it anymore.
It's done. He was done. He was out of their village. Gone. Finished. Not even in their history. Nothing. At that point, he is forgotten.
It's like the Berenstain Bears thing. Like everything just changed at that moment.
Yeah, I don't. That adds something to it.
It does.
It really, truly does.
Because of everything with Native Americans, as far as their what's it called when you do something over and over? Their
routine.
Their routine. What is one of the most important things to them? Is documenting their history, documenting their successes, their defeats, the calendar, the seasons, everything. Everything is documented, right?
Absolutely right. And if he falls out of their documentation from when his sons died, that's interesting to me. Considering in the folklore, if you can consider it folklore, I mean, I know with Native American. Is it folklore with Native American? Who's talking about the Pukwudgie? Obviously, people are. Because once we posted this on social media...
I was amazed at the response we got. Because it was something I was unfamiliar with. And, you know, just as our minds work, you think everybody's not too familiar with it. But it was interesting. I thought, heck yeah, that's going to be an awesome topic for Tsunami Nation because a lot of people are going to be learning about it. And then all of a sudden, we post that. We got more responses to this than we did freaking the Thunderbird or Mothman, whatever you want to call them. Bigfoot, it doesn't matter.
It just doesn't. It just doesn't. And it was really surprising to me. There were a lot of people that were interested in this topic.
Oh, yeah. And it's like people are passionate about it.
Absolutely. Now, here's my thing. You know, like, you know, you haven't gone on paranormal investigations.
No.
Okay? I've been on hundreds of them. Here's my thing. You know, you go to a home and you're doing your research and you're asking them what kind of activity they're having and little type kid stuff is going on. Things are being moved. You know, I take your paper pen and I move it from your desk to your chair. You find out now, like now this makes me think, I find out that this homeowner is in the location of Native American land. Could that be Pukwudgie?
Don't you think, when you think of Pukwudgie, and we've read the horrible things, the burning of the villages, the starting to kill people and shit. Before that, they were just troublesome, mischievous. Maybe... To us, we haven't really done anything to them now in these past centuries.
Well, and if you think about it, in my research, now we're going to have somebody on in a little while, a historical interpreter.
Maybe you're going to make us look stupid, like for saying any of our ideas or whatever.
Of what it is, and I'm welcome to that.
Sure.
I'm welcome.
Yeah,
I'm open to learning, and I'm open to questioning him, and I'm open to saying, hey, this is what I believe, and I know you might have more history and knowledge than I do, but this is what I think. But... Really, who did anything to them were the Native Americans. So,
or that's who they were pissed at anyway.
And that's who they were angry at. And the white man then came in and wiped out the Native Americans. So are they playing around? Have they in recent history done anything?
Or maybe they have and they mark it up to, just regular, if there is such a thing, regular old run-of-the-mill paranormal activity. Like they...
Because think about it. When you go into a investigation and you hear things are being moved around, and they're being moved around in childlike ways, mischievous.
But then all of a sudden it's a poltergeist.
It's a poltergeist, it's a demon or whatever. Could it be a Pukwudgie if they're in the territory of a Pukwudgie? I'm going to ask Sean when he calls.
Yeah, because can't you picture one of those cute little bastards just sitting in the corner laughing their ass off when you're looking for your keys or, you know what I mean? Like just... I picture him as just a troublesome little...
Yeah, now, in the Paranormal State episode, they were getting a little bit more...
In-depth?
Yeah, and the Pukwudgie was getting a little bit more... I don't want to say malevolent. That's not a good word to use. They're getting a little bit more dangerous.
More ominous, more dark. Yeah.
But quite possibly, is that because they just didn't like the people there? I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Maybe people go in there and piss them off.
Yeah. And they're like, hey, I'm just trying to play around here. Like anybody would do that, you know?
Yeah.
Now, we go to the recent history of what we found and what we know about the Pukwudgie. Go ahead, Bill. You could do the first one.
All right. Well, Pukwudgie encounters have been reported in Freetown Fall River State Forest in Massachusetts, which includes the 227-acre Watupa Reservation, which that goes back to what we were talking about earlier. This ain't like somebody's backyard. This is just an area in that little triangle, the 227
exactly
acres.
Exactly right.
It belongs to the Wampanoag Nation. Several unexplained suicides that allege in the state forest have been linked by some to the Pukwudgie lore of pushing people off cliffs, which that's a big deal.
Now, here's an interesting thing. When Bill and I were searching on YouTube to find anyone and anything talking about this Pukwudgie, we found one that I don't know if they were trying to be extremely artistic or what. Remember that one?
Oh, my God.
They're not filmmakers, we'll tell you that.
No. Even after watching, I don't know if they were trying to be serious and they sucked, or they were trying to be funny and they sucked.
But what they were doing, what they did have in that particular 2-3 minutes that we watched, they were at this cliff.
Yeah.
Where people, and this is a known fact.
Right. The facts part of it.
The facts are true. People have gone over that particular cliff. These were not suicidal people. Nothing like that. There are people that have gone in that forest and poof, gone. Yeah.
And we don't know.
And this is not Alaska, people. This
right.
is not the tundra of Alaska.
Right. But we don't know, obviously in all these scenarios, they don't give you every fact available and things like that. Maybe there's vines around, people trip, maybe the by the cliff is sloped and there's, freaking slight mudslides. You never know. You don't know every single aspect of every story, but it was interesting.
It was an interesting fact. And Joe in the chat room just said something interesting.
No, that's Sam.
Oh, sorry. He comes in as Sam tonight. He actually said something interesting. Could the Pukwudgie have been something created by the white man? Or someone, no matter what their race is, no matter what, at that time frame, the Native American, maybe another tribe within the Native Americans, could they have created this and then, screwed it all up? Or even what he says, for example, is the dog breeds now. You have those, fancy, schmancy little dog breeds now, like the, what's that one? The poodle Labrador, the Labradoodle.
Labradoodle.
Like, you have dogs like that.
Why would they, first off, why would they make that dog? It's the ugliest dog I've ever seen on my planet.
Oh, my God, they're so cute.
No, they're not.
They're cute.
Okay.
They make those dogs because people that are allergic to dogs can get that dog because they're hypoallergenic because of the poodle.
Whoa.
Now we just gave you a little lesson on dog breeds. But you look at these dog breeds. Who's to say as they go down the line that they're not going to screw it all up and these dogs are going to be, sickly and stuff like that? Could the Pukwudgie have been formed by another tribe or other people within that area at that time to cause harm to the Wampanoag tribe?
I think I'm saying it right. Our guest might come on and say, "You're an idiot. You're not even saying it right."
Yes, and Danielle was saying it right.
That is a brilliant point, too. I would have to go as far as to say it would have to be another tribe because
There was no white man.
There was no recorded history of Spain or anybody coming over at that point.
At that point.
Right.
But another tribe, were they able to conjure something? The Native American people are very spiritual.
They were just some dark arts too, though.
But they were also very into the spiritual
sure.
way.
Sure.
And what they prayed to and what they did, it could be a very interesting thing. We got up to our most recent history. And now we're going to be joined by Dennis Eastlock of CPR and also of URN Radio. Hello, Dennis. How are you?
I'm doing good, Danielle, but I'm going to correct you, darling. It's Dennis Eastlock. And
Eastlock. I'm sorry.
It's all good.
And we're here with Bill.
It's all good.
Hey, Dennis. Well, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Bill. Hey, so I'm going to give a real quick plug. And the reason that I'm in, I wasn't expecting to be in so quick. I'm still trying to get logged into my system and everything else. the Wampanoags weren't the only ones that dealt with Pukwudgies. Pukwudgies are little people. And if Sean is listening, Sean, go ahead and press 1, and you can give your knowledge as a very well-versed.
Well, we have Sean on the line.
I think Sean might be in, Dennis.
Sean, hi, I'm Danielle, and this is Bill, and of course you know Dennis the Menace.
Yeah, I do.
How are you this evening?
I'm doing great.
Can you please share with our listeners your knowledge on the Pukwudgie?
Well, Pukwudgies is the Algonquin name for little people. Roughly translates little forest dweller in Algonquin language. But the tribe I'm from, also I'm part Choctaw and Yakima, and the Choctaw we call them Koshahukas, which means forest dwellers. But they really exist all over the world. In some places, especially in England, they call them borrowers. They exist in African legend, they exist in Asia, all over. Even leprechauns are in the same category as them.
Interesting.
That is awesome.
And the belief is that the Creator created a race of people to basically live amongst the people He created, the humans, us now. And the basically said they were to help us, and they were very powerful creatures, and still are. But what happened is the people basically abused them and used them, and so they turned against the people and became, in many cases, just tricksters, taking things, stuff like that. But in most northern Algonquin legend, they actually are dangerous.
Do you think that they're only dangerous to that particular area of Native Americans, or do you think that they just recorded it different? Like, did they piss them off worse than everybody else did, and they're still tricksters in different areas, or how do you see that, Sean?
I think it depends on each tribe has a little bit of different take on it. Most of them will say they're tricksters. That's pretty much across the board. But the idea of them being dangerous and things like that, I think depends on not so much the tribe, but the person itself. If the person or people were more abusive to them, then maybe they would, in that case, be more dangerous.
Okay.
I think it's more person basis than regionally.
Now,
because, I mean, leprechauns can be dangerous. They also can be tricksters, too.
Correct.
Well, now, can I ask you this question? And this is something that I find interesting. I'm a ghost investigator. I'm not paranormal investigator because I don't investigate UFOs and urban
cryptid stuff,
cryptid stuff or urban legends or anything like that. But there have been some ghost investigations where they have come up and said, well, this was Pukwudgie. Granted. Now, there are some people that say they have been on investigations paranormally looking for the Pukwudgie, and they've seen it with their own two eyes. But then some of these people, it was more like a trickster within the home, let's say. Your favorite pair of sunglasses moved from the desk to, you know, the bathroom. Why would some people see it and some others not? Does it have the ability to not show you itself
to
and then show you itself?
And
correct. Manifestation?
They're also shapeshifters.
I had read that too,
Typically, what they'll do is they shapeshift depending on what they want to do with the person, or if they want to lure a person. All the time, so they have to use a humanoid topawankas. Typically, their natural color is more gray in state, gray to black. That's kind of their natural color. But they can take the shape of any animal. Some natives would say that they would take the shape of a really nice prized deer. And the hunter would follow this deer and, you know, try to shoot at it, and it would just keep moving and moving, and eventually that may be a way they were lured in, or it was just playing tricks. You know, the deer would be there, then the deer would not. So they can shapeshift, and they also can change form depending on what their situation is. If they're just playing tricks around the house, usually they'll to lie low because they just want to kind of trick you, not really be seen. And sometimes if they want to lure someone or they're more brazen, just like different in the human race. We have some humans that are kind of more standoffish and some that are right up in your face. And the Pugwudgies are the same because the belief is they were created by the same person, the creator.
All right. So you're saying they have the ability to appear and disappear. When they appear, they can appear as several different things. But is it like, is there a square inch of earth that they couldn't appear? Like, you know, say we're down in, I don't know.
In Garden City, Kansas,
where, you know, I'm sure there were Indians here at some point, you know, or Native Americans. And, you know, I know the Pukwudgies started with Native American
belief,
but say, can they go somewhere where it's not a Native American
territory?
Right? Can people mistake their little tricks and things like that for a ghost in their house or for Aunt Alice that is passed on?
Well, I mean, to answer you, I don't think there is nowhere they can't go. Now, whether they're considered what we would call a Pugwudgie or a borrower is maybe a difference, but
there you
but
go.
I think the biggest thing is you know, there's the things in the world that a lot of people can't explain. Anthropologists will say that, you know, things, for instance, like dragons or water beasts and how they show up in every culture, and Pugwudgies show up in every culture. And so most people say that when cultures around the world and studied different anthropologies and cultural geography, is that when cultures have something similar, it must have been a real phenomenon at one
time.
See,
I agree with that, yeah.
And so to me, I just think they're just called different things and that there is no place we can't go.
All right. I completely agree with that. We've talked about that a lot.
Well, here's the thought. If a Pukwudgie can appear anywhere, wouldn't it be more likely to appear on just a location that Native Americans have once held sacred or Native Americans have once held?
I agree.
But what about the Irish?
I think you're going to have more of a chance in that sense. But I also think the other thing is, and we're taught this in a lot of lore you hear passed down, is that if you're nice to the Pukwudgies and you respect them being there, they usually will leave you alone. But typically, it believed to me in Cherokee, my buddy who's Cherokee, says that every family on the earth has a little person living with their family. As kind of a trickster, but also sometimes the Cherokee see it more as a protector, and if you don't are nice to it, then it can be dangerous against your family. So maybe it's the case that every family has been given this little person.
That is awesome.
I come from the Cherokee tribe, so I agree with your buddy that's Cherokee in the fact that there are tricksters amongst the Cherokees. I grew up knowing things would move. Things would be here, then there. And it was more the trickster thing. It wasn't that it was a quote-unquote evil entity moving shit. It was just, things just move.
Yeah.
Now,
I think many of them are that way, just tricksters. Because in the Choctaw, our forest dwellers, we're told to leave stuff with them. When you take a deer, leave some for them as well. But those that I think who are greedy against what the Creator's wishes are, then I think they become vengeful.
Well, Dennis, talking to you earlier, I know you've encountered a Pukwudgie. You know, you've had your dealings with them. Sean, you've encountered them too, or you've experienced that or felt them? Okay.
Can you tell us a little bit about that, Sean?
I'm going to do a shameless plug first.
All right.
Okay, go ahead, Dennis. Absolutely.
Go ahead, Dennis.
Told you, he's a menace.
He's a Pukwudgie.
He's a Are you a puck wedgie, Dennis?
I don't know how your audience will take it, so I'll bite my tongue.
No, he's not a
Sean
puck wedgie.
Sean was on in.
Go ahead.
Can I drop the F bomb on your show?
Absolutely.
Danielle does.
Okay.
I do. I can't control myself.
Okay. Well, I've been called a fuck bucket, which I think
that's
is close
close
to a puck wedgie because we're both tricksters.
Yeah.
But and dead silence falls upon the crowd, and you can hear the pin drop. What the hell? I did an investigation at a location that Sean is actually the Indian interpreter at. It's called Henricus Historical Park.
Thank God you pronounced that for me. I tried to say that in the beginning of the show, and I murdered it. But go ahead.
I've been there probably a dozen times at this point. And I'll tell you, if anybody gets up into the Virginia neck of the woods and you have the option to book an overnight at Henricus Historical Park, do it. It's well worth it. It does have puck wedgies on site. I will tell you this, because the last time that Sean and I were together with a group, we did encounter a puck wedgie. There are photographs of me about 5 feet away from this little 2 to 3 foot tall black figure in the woods, off in the bushes. And there's I don't even know how to explain it. But we knew we were being followed by something. We heard the trees rustling. We heard the leaves rustling off the path. And there were five of us together. And Sean, at any time, if I'm wrong, you're welcome to jump in and go, no, that's not how it went down.
All right.
But the five of us were walking pretty much side by side, so five abreast. The one girl said, something is following us. Don't turn around. And one of the other girls just kind of held her camera over her shoulder and started taking pictures behind us. In a couple of the pictures, you see this little short black figure shows up. Now, this is on, and I kid you not, it was August 1st. It was a... No, it wasn't Kanye.
Okay, all
so
right.
Kanye, you don't get best picture of the year, dude.
No kidding.
Trust me.
Even people that don't like him, we're plugging him on our show. That's despicable. I hate it.
I know. You just plugged him on my show.
Yeah.
Yeah, way to go. But this girl held her camera over her shoulder, aimed it backwards, and started snapping pictures. You see a little short black figure off on the side of the path, and there is one light above it. Now, this is on a full moon night. Could it have been just the way the light hit off a leaf of a tree? Yeah, it could have been. That's fine. I'll accept that. Tracy Ann, who is a member of CPR Corps, out of Chicagoland, I actually walked back, talked to it, welcomed it amongst us, but we all knew something was there. Then I turned around, and when she came back up to the group, I turned around and I walked back to it, and I went to my knees, and I said, you're welcome to join us. I take a knee in your honor. I know your people have been through some pretty rough shit. I offer you nothing more than respect. I ask the same from you. And Sandy is up 30 feet away, maybe. Sean, agree?
Yeah.
And she's snapping pictures off of her little Nikon portable. She actually has a couple of pictures of what looks like a little black figure in the tree line that I'm looking directly at this black spot because I can see this thing.
I can see it, I can sense it, I feel it, I know it's right there. And I'm looking right at it as she's taking pictures and the little black silhouette shows up in the tree line.
Yep.
So we did encounter a Pukwudgie that night at Henricus Historical Park. No bullshit, no word of a lie.
Because as soon as we felt that behind us. You know, they felt that. I said, I was kind of bouncing back and forth for sure. I said, I think it's a Pukwudgie.
Wow.
And
hey, either one of you guys, Sean, Dennis, do they, this is a question from the chat room from Joe. Are they a singular entity? Do they travel in packs? What's the?
They have like a core village or a group. And what they'll do is typically when they do venture off alone, just like humans, they're much like the humans. You think of them in that way, in the sense of the way they live in groups, but also venture off. But it seems to me that the dangerous ones come about when they usually have a Topowonkus along with them. Now, a Topowonkus is, of course, this. It's usually a humanoid. Usually the body of someone they have already taken. And typically it seems that if there's no Topowonkus around, then usually the good clue is, well, they're not here for any really dangerous act, but they're just here to
play tricks. Right, those are the tricksters, right? The ones without the Topowonkus?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it seems like that all of them could have a Topowonkus. You know, they all have that ability to do so, but you know, I would go back to it's all about how you respect them. You respect them and give them their space and let them play their tricks, and you know, sometimes reward them with different stuff in your house or where you're at. They usually leave
now,
you alone.
That's interesting, because in some of my research, and it wasn't too extensive, you know, I just did some research the past few days. I heard that if you're having an issue with the Pukwudgie in your home or on your property or things like that, that you should give back to the earth, plant fruit trees and plants and flowers to give them an area where they belong. Say, hey, listen, leave my home alone, leave my kids alone, don't be playing tricks in my house, this is your area. Is that a true thing?
Somewhat. It does have some truth. They do like that. You got to understand what happened to them is man, you know, abused them so much. And because of man's abusive nature and really greed, and that goes for man in general, I mean, we have this kind of an aside moment we're going to go to, but we have this myth that Native people were not detrimental to the environment. And in many ways, we're wrong in that assumption. You know, I can tell you, for example, that and what today we would call the Tidewater region of Virginia, in 1607 when the English arrived, there's hardly no deer there because the Powhatan have encircled 100 acres and they'll kill anything that moves. If you move over to the plains before they got horses, they're driving whole herds of buffalo off a cliff. And they have proven that they didn't eat all these buffalo. So this idea of in sync with nature is kind of a myth we've given these given Native people, and that the Pukwudgies, I think, are there, and why the fruit and why the other giving back to Native Earth works, it shows that we're once again respecting and not being greedy to the earth that gives all. And I think once you do that, they kind of go to their own domain and kind of leave you alone. They're kind of like, you know, giving you a thumbs up for getting back to the original plan that the Creator set forth.
Oh, that's actually really interesting. Now, here's another question, again, from Joe in the chat room. You know how, there's a Lake Murray monster in South Carolina that where you have fish and game and fish and wildlife out looking for this particular creature. Because people, so many people have come forward saying, hey, we're seeing this.
Anywhere there's a big lake or, you know,
large forest, people are like, well, we've seen something, and then, like, fish and game and wildlife get involved. Do you think there's a reason why, with the Pukwudgie, they haven't gotten involved? Do you think that they feel that it's just folklore and nonsense, or do you think that perhaps somewhere they are really involved?
Or you know, the Pukwudgie, you know, if they are magical and things like that, maybe they're like, you leave us alone, we leave you alone, we play a couple of tricks, you know?
Perhaps.
Yeah, I think sometimes they don't get involved with other stuff, maybe other creatures and things like that, because, they're kind of in their own domain. They don't bother him, you don't bother it, you know? But the other question is if some of these things are shape-shifted Pukwudgies, and that what we're actually seeing could be different. All Pukwudgies have different levels of power, and could it be some of these things we see are really these little people transformed into something else?
Oh, that's interesting. They can transform into thinking it's a deer, it's a bear, it's
right.
an ox, it's a whatever.
Yeah, they can change into anything
they want
to.
Yeah, and before we go, because that's an awesome string. I want to follow that string. But Sean, with your knowledge on the Pukwudgie and stuff like that, and you were talking about they have different levels of power or rank, whatever. Do you think that they progress? Is it something that they were created? You know, where this Pukwudgie is a lower level, this one's a bigger level. Can they progress in your opinion or in your studies or anything?
You know, and I'm really not sure. You know, I think the best way to put it this way is I think they all have probably the same level of power. I think it's how they tap into it is it can differ between the other ones, or also their attitude as well. Because all the legend says, and every culture I've ever studied them, even borrowers and you name it, that they what they do is that they are the biggest correspondence is they're all human-like. So if you look at it that way, different humans can have different power and some power that they may have, but they haven't yet tapped into it. And that may be the case for the Pukwudgies.
I see.
That's interesting because in some of our research, there was a little note here that I wrote that said they can transform into a walking porcupine, look like a porcupine in the back and in the front, kind of troll-like,
right.
human-like, walking upright. So that's very interesting, whether or not if one is stronger than another, if one is maybe more bothered than another, you know, that they can do bigger and better things. And
maybe a weaker one can only look troll-like, and the other one can look like a 12-point buck, you know.
Exactly
the,
right.
And I think it could be depending on what they want to learn, too.
Right.
Exactly right. And with Dennis just doing this investigation not that long ago,
uh-huh.
and, could it have been a Pukwudgie that was just trying to, like you said, your picture looked more like a dark shadow. It was black in the trees and everything else.
Maybe they know what you're looking for.
It knows what you're looking for.
Who knows?
You know, just like anyone that searching for Bigfoot, after all of these years, they know what trap cameras are. Maybe they're more intelligent. So can it have said, hey, Dennis, you're trying to take my picture? I will be darker than night. Like, you know what I mean?
Well,
what do you think about that, Dennis?
How about the simple fact that it knew I meant it no harm when I took to my knees and I offered it my friendship? How about the simple fact that I
offered
it respect,
right? Yeah.
And it offered me respect.
Well, and Dennis, you do actual ghost hunting as well. And think about when you go
to the amount.
Exactly. You and I both. Think about when you go into a location and you say, before you go into that location, I mean you no harm, I'm here to just help and da-da-da. You say all that kind of stuff. I come in bright light. I come. So it's the same thing. If this creature is feeling that you were a friend, maybe it was, just saying, hey, listen, this guy's my friend, I'm his friend, we'll travel together and go through this.
Or are they just mischievous and say, well, screw humans? And
because I'll tell you something. I watched a video 2 days ago on YouTube. It actually irritated me that I actually made my first.
I know, we watched it.
I made my first nasty comments on someone's YouTube. And I normally don't do that. I normally just move on and forget about it. And, I don't if it's not a positive comment, I don't need to make one. But this actually aggravated me. There were these people in the woods up in Massachusetts. They were hunting for the puck wedgie, and this woman acted like she had a demonic possession. She fell to the ground. She was growling like an animal.
It looked like an episode of Cops, but like the possession episode.
Yes. Yeah. It was unbelievable. Yeah. These three men pretended to hold her down.
And she's growling like...
She's growling like I don't know what and saying that a puck wedgie attacks her. And listen, whether they can attack or not, I don't know. I have never looked for one.
Well, they said, James, hold her feet. He's like, I can't.
Yeah, that is totally not the way it goes down. That's why they use a topolancus or a shapeshift. And what that does is lure away from the group. They would never attack in a group.
Exactly. That's how I kind of felt. Because I really think my feeling on the Native Americans that they were just so spiritual. They pray to many different kinds of cryptozoology creatures that we believe could exist or not exist today. I just don't believe that these puck wedgies would go and attack some woman that's just staying there.
Well,
and then as she was doing what you did at first, she was saying, oh, hello, I'm here, and I'm being nice and kind. I don't think it could happen.
Danielle, Sean, Dennis, all of you guys, what if, like we're talking about, that lady just being a fool, doing that stuff. Do you think that, the puck witches, that's our topic tonight, but just the supernatural in a blanket.
Let me put this out there first. Bill is our resident skeptic. He believes really not in too much.
No, but I believe more and more all the time.
Yes.
I get to talk to people like Sean, and Dennis and I have talked a lot, and you've taught me a lot. But don't you think that we as a whole, paranormal groups and television and everything, all these fakesters out there that are making these YouTube things, could that not antagonize things? That would make things just somewhat mischievous and to just pissed off, or do you think that they don't even care about that stuff?
Well, keep in mind, one of the first words that comes into play every time that anybody mentions a puckwudgie, one of the first words that is mentioned is trickster.
Yeah, it's not, the first word that's mentioned isn't, oh my God, they're demonic.
Yeah, they're
going to
tackle some chicken.
You take a prepubescent boy and a puck wedgie, and they might be the same kind of thing, in my opinion.
I agree with that. It is a trickster first. And, in the study that I've done on them, it seems that, dangerous seems to be an afterthought and not as widespread as as just a trickster. But sometimes, tricksters, there's many other tricksters too also out there as well, and they can also cause danger to happen to you by being so tricky. And but I don't think it would just outright attack someone. It's going to play with them first before it attacks them, and it's usually going to lure them away.
But you see these people antagonizing, though. That's how I look at it. Even on some of the shows, the TV shows where people go in there busting in like freaking gangbusters. Oh, I'm going to tell you something.
Wearing their tight black T-shirts and tattoos.
I just don't understand why you would antagonize anybody. I think if there's a real entity there, you don't want to piss them off, I wouldn't think.
Treat
them with some respect.
And you have to treat whether you're a paranormal investigator into the things that happen in nature, and when I say nature, I mean the woods, cryptozoology, or spirit, you have to go in with respect or get out of this field. That's all I'm saying. Dennis, you know us to be, for many months now, you know us through Ryan and Holly. They have a great show on your network, the Freaking Awesome Paranormal Show. But there is one thing, and I'm going to let you both know a little in. I am huge on paranormal standards. There isn't any. Anybody can go out there and do whatever the hell they want. And you see, Dennis, when you were talking about, I'm sorry, I'm going to pronounce it horribly wrong. Again, plug the area, Horatio Park. Oh, God,
in
I'm terrible. Henricus Historical Park.
Park.
Okay. Now, the first thing you said was book and overnight. Book. Don't trample through there and trespass.
Don't climb over the fence.
Don't climb over the fence.
Yeah.
Don't commit. The first thing you said was book. And that is huge to me. People that are in this community that trespass on property, people that are in this community that don't get permission to be in certain places.
Well, legally, first off, legally. Second, respect to the owners of the property. And third, owners, you know, respect to the whatever you're trying
to
find.
To the being
find.
Or
yeah.
the paranormal yeah. spirit or whatever.
Yeah.
That I'm
well,
huge on
I,
that.
I will tell you this. Henricus Historical Park is owned by, well, it is governed by, and Sean, correct me if I'm wrong, it is governed by Chesterfield County, which is a local jurisdiction. I have already been face-to-face with the local police department that has jurisdiction over it because somebody didn't close the gate properly one night we were doing an investigation.
Yeah, it will happen.
I aimed a flashlight at them because I thought it was other investigators, and I found that it wasn't a flashlight aimed back at me.
Absolutely.
It was a badge and a weapon. So don't go screwing around. Don't.
Right.
Well, I'm not one to be politically correct, and I'm not one to be clean language. Don't go fucking around where you don't belong. If you're not allowed there, if you're not permitted to be there, don't be there.
No,
there's a
million places, Dennis, Sean. Everybody knows there's a million places now. Now that paranormal things are 100% accepted, really.
Well, now that it's so mainstream.
Yeah, and we're in Kansas. We're in the Bible Belt right now. We're in Southwest Kansas. It's even getting accepted here. It's accepted, you know, throughout. Don't be trespassing on people's shit. Just do your get
and,
the permission.
And here's Sean. Do you investigate the paranormal? Like, regularly, is it something that you totally do, or how is that for you? Because I know that you're a historical interpreter and that you know so much about the Puck Wedge, and I know that we got off of this whole topic because it gets me crazy with paranormal standards. I want to smack somebody in the teeth.
Oh.
But I got to...
The answer would be not actively. However, I have...
I think the night that I took Sean through the location was probably his first ever actual paranormal investigation. Is that pretty accurate?
That's pretty accurate. I mean, you know, I did some stuff when I was at in college. We had some a ghost hunter club. I only did a couple, but it was just kind of just doing it. You know, never nothing like that investigation I did with you, Dennis.
Well, I can speak for myself here, Sean. I've been very impressed with your knowledge, your descriptions of things, your the whole thing about the...
It actually was very, very impressive because to find someone within that Pokwedgie knowledge, like, listen, Bill had never heard of it prior. We just watched a documentary a few days ago from one of our close friends, John Brightman, that he had on Destination America, and it was called America's Bermuda Triangle, the Bridgewater Triangle. This happens in Freetown, Massachusetts, which happens, and it happens to be a hotbed for the Puck Wedgie, and I didn't know this. Now, my first knowledge of the Puck Wedgie, and I hate to say it, because God forgive me, please don't strike me dead, I did watch paranormal TV at one point. And it happened to be paranormal.
Everybody did. I mean,
everybody did.
Obviously.
And it happened to be Paranormal State. And it was, I think, season 3 or season 4.
Season 4.
Of Paranormal State, where they did a Puck Wedgie episode. But then when I saw John Brightman's
documentary
on that particular area, where there was so much different kinds of paranormal activity going on this particular land, UFO stuff, Bigfoot stuff, Puck Wedgie stuff, I said, Bill, let's do a show on the Puck Wedgie. When we started posting that on Facebook and Twitter, we never got so many people coming to us saying, oh, my God, we just had a conversation about this the other day. My family knows about the Puck Wedge. I'm Native American and this and that. It was shocking to me because for years now, I mean, season four of Paranormal State, by this point, was like in the 80s to my mind. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. This was such a hot topic. I wish that more people would go out and start investigating this kind of thing.
I know.
Sean, yeah. You need to get way more involved and start investigating and get your boots on the ground and collect
yeah.
evidence.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've known about it since a little kid. I mean, it's just something in Native stuff we're told stories and legends and things like that. And that's the one thing I think that's still unique about the Native culture is that so much old tradition still exists in it. And, you know, you can read a lot, but, you know, talking to the elders is what I always did as a kid, and that's why I learned a lot, because a lot of the other kids my age weren't too worried about it, and it's, you know, in a Native culture today, it's still kind of that way, but, yeah, I mean, I know they exist. You know, my mom also, my grandmother, who's from Irish descent, told me a lot about borrowers.
Yep.
That's interesting to me because I've been intrigued with the Native American culture for years and years and years before I was even involved in the paranormal.
One of our good friends on our network actually
is a shaman within the Native American.
He's been talking to us a lot.
Yes,
about it.
And there are just so many things that intrigue me and so many things that leave question in my mind about a lot of their beliefs. And like I said before, the Thunderbird.
We had a Mothman episode, Sean and Dennis. I don't know if you guys heard that episode, but a few weeks ago we had the Mothman, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of our research into it turned out from the Thunderbird.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All of our research in that Mothman mm-hmm. turned right back to be the Thunderbird.
Yep.
Yeah.
In my mind. Right. Like, to me, Mothman is the Thunderbird.
Yep.
I'm going to chuck Sean under the bus on this one. Sean,
do it.
At what age was your first time in a sweat tent?
15.
Now, for those that don't know, would you please explain what a sweat tent is?
Sweat lodge is, if you don't know what you're doing, do not just go make one. All right, now get off of my chest.
That's the disclaimer. So nomination does not agree with making the sweat lodge.
Yeah. Well, what it is typically it's done for Native men, usually, and I've never really seen where you had women, but what it is it's a small lodge, usually an oval type shape or round, covered and usually now canvas. Back in the wee old timey days, it would be a 1492 days, we call it. It would be raw hide or something like that. And what it is it's you take hot rocks in the fire and you place them in water and it creates a lot of steam, gets really hot in there. Basically, it's a sauna on steroids. And you're in there and basically it's a purification thing. So you will smudge first before you get in it. Then you will smoke, the peace pipe, tobacco, and you will sit
peyote?
There and just sweat. Sometimes peyote is used, not all the time. I've been to sweats since where it wasn't. Typically that's on vision quest and coming to age ceremonies is when that is done. And that's not done on every sweat. It just depends. Usually coming to age is around 15, you know. Years old.
I have heard so much about these sweat lodges. You know, I'm originally from New York City, and these sweat lodges about 5 years ago became like a trendy thing. I'm disabled. I have a neurological disorder, and I actually had my doctor, who is the head of neurosurgery for New York Presbyterian Hospital, a brain surgeon, tell me that I should go to a sweat lodge to get healed, that all the medication in the world won't help me, but a sweat lodge would. And I'm glad you brought that up, Dennis, because I am dying to know more about the sweat lodge. We have about 4 minutes to talk about it because our show is going to end, but I need to hear it. I'm sorry.
Perfect.
We'll have to go on.
All right. Well, I'll be real quick. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have the opportunity, if you're in Virginia, check out Enriquez Historical Park. If you can't find that, look me up. I am CPR Dennis on Facebook. I am CPR Dennis on Twitter.
Yeah.
I will hook you up. We will make a location.
www.enriquez.org.
We will
now,
make
Sean,
you a visitation time. But, Sean, tell her all about sweat lodges from actual Native American history.
And where everybody can find you, Sean. Where everybody can find you on social media.
We want to be able to find you on social media. We want to have both of you guys back. We have 10 shows on this network, so 10 opportunities to have you guys back.
I'm impressed, man.
Oh, my God. This was like one of the best conversations we had. Nobody was talking over each other. Well, except Dennis, but, you know, he's a menace.
You don't want me back. Quit lying.
But I have to say that I have been enlightened. I have learned something tonight.
No, same here.
The whole reason why we do this show, Tsunami Nation, it's weird news, strange things in the news, things like that.
Some obscure things.
Some obscure that we thought nobody heard of. But
right,
then look,
but
we got these two guys calling in. They're like, what are you talking about? You never heard of the puck wedge?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have been enlightened. I now know way more about the puck wedge than I did going into this. But Sean, please tell everybody where they can find you. Tell everybody what you do, where you're from, what's up. Let's go.
All right. Well, I work at Enriquez Historical Park. I'm the Powhatan Indian Specialist, or Native Specialist, as they call me. From Virginia, that's where our park is. And you can find our park website. It would be www.henricus.org, which is henricus.org. And we post all our up-to-date stuff. We also have Henricus Facebook page. Just type in Henricus Historical Park in the search bar of Facebook and hit us up. And I think we're also, our media person is working on a Twitter as well. So
get with it, media person. It takes 2 seconds.
I know. Well, you know, when you're at a county park, you got to go through all the hoops.
I know.
You know, and then I'm on Facebook, Sean Edwards, friends with Dennis. So if you want to PM me or whatever.
Stalk Dennis.
Yeah.
Stalk Dennis until you find Sean.
Yeah.
And Dennis, I want to thank you for bringing Sean on tonight. Sean, you can't imagine how much we appreciate you coming on. Shedding light on this. This was freaking
really shedding
awesome,
light.
Man.
To a subject that I don't think gets enough coverage within radio.
I know.
I really don't think it gets enough coverage. I don't think that park gets enough coverage.
I don't think the puck wedgie gets enough coverage. I don't think any of this tonight gets enough.
Yeah, it absolutely doesn't. And I hope everyone goes and contacts Sean and Dennis, gets more information on Henriquez.
I'm going to say it right. And then say
Henriquez. Okay. Listen, I'm from New York. No. I got a bad accent, so it's going to come out though. Any way I say it, I'll just spell it right.
It's okay. I speak Algonquin, so.
Oh, there
well,
you
let
go.
Let me try it this way. Yo, Danielle, listen. It's Henriquez. Got it?
That's your Ohio showing, Dennis. That's your Ohio show, and I heard Ohio in that.
But I want to thank you both for having us, Danielle.
Yeah.
It's been a blast, man. Thank you so much.
It was absolutely wonderful. And Dennis, tell everybody about URN.
Well, check us out Wednesday night, Full Spectrum Radio, URN Radio Network. We're also on Blog Talk, just like this is. I think tomorrow night, and I'm trying to line it up, I have the historical director for Henriquez Historical Park. Catch that, Danielle. Henriquez Historical Park.
Henriquez.
And I'm going to have... And I'm going to have the Indian interpreter, Sean, who is with us now. So I'm praying for that tomorrow night. Check out our past episodes. We've got some really incredible shit back there. Check out the archives.
Absolutely.
Full Spectrum Radio.
Awesome show too. Yeah.
You definitely do, and you got my girl Holly on your network.
Yeah.
Holly Mullins, my girl. So we always are, we come on once in a while for their strange news, and we co-host with them a little bit on Dennis's network.
Yeah.
We just love you guys. We love URN. Unfortunately, or fortunately, whatever, you want to be our competition, Dennis. Bill has his show tomorrow night, so whatever. But...
That's all right. Sorry, man. I'll tell you what, Bill.
Yeah.
What do you got going on tomorrow night?
I have a show tomorrow night.
Tomorrow
I know
night.
That.
We have Danny Gager on.
We discussed that.
we
discussed that you have a show, but how about if I call into your show?
While you call into my show tomorrow night?
And
well,
we
tomorrow
make
night.
It a. And we make it a true, full spectrum show.
We'd have to limit it to like a 5 minute.
Wait, we could do that next week, Dennis. This is an idea. We can do that next week. This week we're kind of doing a football kickoff.
Two hour.
You know, football start, and don't get involved in my football, or I'll kick somebody's booty.
At 9, yeah.
We
have a sports show on the.
Oh,
we have.
So that they're
that's
coming
awesome.
Out.
Awesome. So you're Ohio State fans, right? Because we just kicked ass the other night?
Baby, I don't watch college. Come play with the big boys.
If we're talking college, unfortunately, for all the people listening, I'm a Longhorns fan, and they got their ass kicked.
Well, and I don't watch college.
Yeah, they did.
They're not up to the big boys.
I'm a rep Bama.
Who's a Bama fan?
Sean.
I am.
Sean?
Sure, and you know what? If I had to watch college, I'd be a Bama fan.
Well,
I'm a Southern boy. That's where my people are from. Alabama.
That's
a Choctaw name.
Sean, that accent didn't come out the entire time you were on the show until you mentioned Bama. He's like, I'm a football boy.
There it is.
Yeah.
Well, I'm only an NFL girl, and I only like the Cowboys. And yes, I am from New York City,
what?
And no, I'm not a Giants or Jets fan.
I'm a Cowboys fan.
I'm an Eagles fan.
Oh, my God.
Well,
hey, the Eagles been blowing
okay,
it up.
It's okay, Danielle. We understand that you're completely liberal and you love the gay rights and all that. You can cheer for Dallas.
I will cheer for Dallas. I will wave my rainbow pom-poms high. I ain't got no problem with that, baby.
Hey, you know Dallas? We call them a Dallas Cowgirl.
You know,
everybody does.
You know what we call Dallas? America's team, boy. He's all just jealous. Listen, I got a 27-year-old son that's a Giants fan. I want to smack him across the room every freaking Sunday. But we all get along. Just get along.
I will tell Sean, if the preseason is any indication.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
over the
offseason, I thought Chip Kelly lost his freaking marbles, okay? He kept going stupid. And then all of a sudden, if the preseason is any indication, the Eagles are scoring at will. Like, they're scoring.
Let me tell you something. I hate those Eagles.
Hey,
you go to an Eagles game.
They're
going to
say this about Chip Kelly. They're going to say either he was crazy or a genius.
Right. Exactly right. I'm hoping he's crazy.
And I'll tell you something.
I'm hoping he's a genius.
I got to cut it quick. I've been to one game where the Eagles are. They will pee on you if you are not a fan of the Eagles in their stadium. That's all I got to say. They are hardcore.
Well, the only stadium with a jail and a judge.
Exactly.
Thank
right.
you guys for being on.
Thanks.
Thank
you're
going
to cut us off. We have to bounce.
Thank you for listening to the nomination. You guys are
well, thank
great.
You, Kena.
We had great guests tonight. Thank you, everybody that listens. We love you all. Love and light. I could have went on and on.
Thank you for listening to this presentation on the EQ by Incarnate Broadcast Network. May be leaving for now, but the nightmares will return.